Remote staff is remote staff. So making sure that people are showing up every day, making sure that they're managed appropriately, making sure they're being productive at the levels that they're supposed to be, right? And also that we keep their morale high and keep them engaged.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter, coach, and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Today, we're going to hear from a founder who has managed a 4% turnover rate through global growth and can give us a little insight on how she attracts, retains, and keeps morale high. I have founder and CEO of Global Medical Virtual Assistants, Beth Raboyne, with me. Beth, thanks so much for joining us. I've really been looking forward to this conversation. Can we start by having you tell us a little bit about what Global Medical VAs does?
Yeah, we are in the healthcare industry. We service and provide medical virtual assistance to hospitals, healthcare practices, big and small across the United States, all through remote staffing from the Philippines.
Wow. And, you know, in our first conversation, you shared that you have 1,500 employees in the Philippines.
Yes.
And only about 7 here in the United States.
Yes.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit first about the challenges of having such a small team here in the U.S. and such a mammoth team overseas and the challenges that's presented.
Sure. I'd have to say, we don't really have the challenges that you would think immediately come to mind just by having a small team here and a very large team abroad. Whether it's, you know, across the pond or it's here in the United States, any remote staffing, there's challenges with remote staffing, right?
Good.
So for us internally, it hasn't really been, okay, it's here versus overseas. Remote staff is remote staff. So making sure that people are showing up every day, making sure that they're managed appropriately, making sure they're being productive at the levels that they're supposed to be, right? And also that we keep their morale high and keep them engaged. However, what we have found is that as long as we have the right management team in place, as long as we recruit the right people that are engaged and want to stay engaged, that has really been the key. Keeping them engaged has not been difficult because I think we're doing a really great job of handling, as applications are coming in, we're really finding which ones are a great culture fit for our culture within our organization. That has been the absolute key to the success.
So would you say that's really, let's say, the lowest common denominator around a 4% turnover rate, which is extremely low? I mean, I always tell my clients your goal should be to have nothing higher than 10%.
Right.
So that's amazing.
Honestly, the number one factor has been culture. We have found that within the first 3 months of a new hire, if it's not going to work, we find out in those first 3 months. So what we have done is we worked really, really hard to make sure that we have the right questioning in place before, you know, as they go through the application process, they understand what the role is before they even make it through the rest of our process of interviews. Because if they're not a great fit for the role and they don't know that ahead of time, that's also where the turnover can be high. If they don't understand exactly what they're getting into, that's where the turnover can be high. So I think for us, that's one of the critical pieces of there has to be a certain amount of education that has to happen on their way in. What do they know about us? What do they know about the role? Do they know which role they're actually applying for? You know, what is the job and the scope of the position? Do you meet the qualifications in terms of your background? Will you be successful here? So as long as we're making sure we're educating on the front end, we're not just taking anybody that applies. And I think some of the struggles that everyone is having, regardless of what industry you're in, is that there is such a need for talent that you'll take just about anybody that number one, sends their resume, follows up, shows up to, you know, to all the interviews and actually shows up on day one. Then you're like, okay, win, woo, score. We've got somebody in the door. But in fact, that's not the key to success. That's not going to make them continue to show up. That's not going to make them stay engaged. So finding and making sure that you've got the right people on the front end before even coming in and filling those roles is really been what we have found the key to success in terms of that.
Yeah. You know, I've said this ad nauseum and take the opportunity to repeat it whenever possible, that over 50% of employees leave within the first 18 months of a job for reasons having nothing to do with skills and abilities.
It's
the culture piece, right?
It's the culture piece.
So if you go back to founding the company in the fall of 2018 to now a little over 7 years ago. And look at that, these lessons that you have learned. Like, how were you doing it initially versus how, you know, we know how you're doing it now, but how long did that process take from then to where you are currently to figure that out?
Gosh, we've come a long way.
Yeah.
We've come a really long way. At first, I was just looking at whoever was coming in, do they have the talent to do the job? I was not paying attention to culture. That was really not part of. Within a year, I very quickly realized, no, culture is key to the, we can train someone.
That's
we
correct.
Can upskill them.
That's right.
So I would rather have somebody, I learned very quickly after the course of a year or two, that if you have someone that is engaged and their culture fits within your culture, you can upskill them. You can figure out a way to get them to be trained to the level that you need them to be, to a certain extent, of course, but when it comes to some of the entry-level positions. But one of the other things I really learned is that there also is that middle management role. That middle management person also needs to make, we need to make sure that they're incredibly, not only in line with their culture, but the people that work with them are going to like them. Because what we have learned, and we all know this as we've kind of been hiring, you know, the millennials and Generation Zers, like the key factor in them really liking their role and liking their job and staying is that they like their manager.
Yeah.
If they don't like their manager, they leave.
Yeah.
They don't care about the company. They don't care about if you're doing good in the world. They don't care about what great things are happening. They care about who their direct manager is.
Right.
And so we very quickly then established, okay, the key to making sure that we have retention is our management needs to be excellent. And so needs to be excellent in not coaching, needs to be excellent in communication, needs to be excellent in
very good
in being able to upskill when needed, be able to dive in and have a personal conversation with someone and kind of dive into, is it a will issue? Is it a skill issue? If it's a will issue, what's happening? And 9 out of 10 times it's something happening in their personal life. Mm-hmm. So being able to connect, right? So there's those that aren't very tactical. Those are not tactile things that happen. Those are some things that are part of either upskilling even your management team of learning to be more empathetic, learning how to have more of a personal touch and a personal conversation with someone to uncover what's going on. And so we spent a lot of time on employee surveys, and they're only surveying their manager so that we know, so that we can catch red flags. Because if they're not liking their manager and we're getting negative feedback, we know that then there's an attrition risk.
Right.
So we've done things like that to make sure that we're kind of moving in the right direction of making sure that our attrition stays very, very low. And a big part of that is making sure that our management team is really strong.
So why the Philippines?
Yeah, the Philippines is like a second home to me. I love it. I absolutely love it there. But the Philippines, because number one, foremost, and especially in the healthcare industry, we need people that have an empathetic background, right? They're just naturally empathetic. The Philippine culture is so incredibly empathetic. The number one graduating degree in the Philippines is nursing. So
for me,
I mean, it's a hotbed of the place of the place
for
to be able
people
to
you need.
The right
yes,
people it, that we need for this for our industry in the medical virtual assistant space, and then of course English. English is widely spoken. And now in today's age, we can find a huge population of very strong English speaking with very limited neutral accents or no accent at all.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, how could you not grab onto that? The education level is high. They're empathetic. the, you know, obviously the medical background for me, for my industry and the medical health space, like the healthcare space, we need to have people that we know are medically trained. So, I mean, there's a hotbed of talent right there and it just made the most sense.
That's awesome. And you know, as somebody who also has, I don't certainly don't have 1500 Filipinos working for me, but I do have Filipinos working for me and I adore them.
Yes.
I mean, they can speak well, they write well. I mean, you know, usually before if they, you know, if they're going to send something out to someone on my behalf, they do run it by me first because sometimes there's a few too many exclamation points or there's something that, first of all, I would never say, right? And so, and some of that just has to be taught, right? And learned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what tips do you have, Beth, for leaders listening to keep morale high when their teams are, you know, remote abroad?
Yeah. I think you've got to give an outlet for your team to be able to speak openly and, or even if it's in, you know, an anonymous survey or something to be able to understand behind the scenes what's happening in their lives, what the things that they would want and need. So here at GMVA, we have lots of outlets to be able to do that. We have that through their surveys done every month about their manager, but we also give them the opportunity. We have our team in our HR that will do one-on-ones with, randomly do one-on-ones with people in our company. So we do about 15 one-on-ones a month with random people in our company. We reach out randomly and say, hey, I'd love to meet with you for a quick 15-minute chat. And we just get an understanding from them. What do you love about your job? What don't you like about your job? Is there anything that GMVA isn't doing today that we should do better or we can offer in the future? And so that's kind of where we get some of that. That's the juicy stuff. That's the stuff that we need to know to make sure that, okay, if we get a lot of requests or a lot of things come through as suggestions and we know, okay, we're falling short somewhere and someone might look somewhere else to find that somewhere else, right? And, or maybe we're missing the mark. What we think is important here is something that's not important to them. So making sure that we're offering benefits that they would really appreciate,
right?
You know, if we're offering a gym membership as a perk and nobody wants to go to the gym because
what's the point of the perk?
Right. And it's not a perk to them, right?
That's
so
right.
We find a perk that would be worthwhile. So that some of those, I mean, that's a simple way of kind of looking at it. But in the end,
it's
really being able to hear what they have to say, what would make their lives better, what would be really a great perk, what would be some of the additional things that we could do better here. And it may have nothing to do with perks. It may have to do with, you know, our meetings are too monotonous. Our meetings are the same. We're not learning anything new. You talk about internal leadership, but no one gets the opportunity to move up, right? So like those sorts of things, that's when you really start to learn more about, you know, about the people that work for you and what they're looking to get back out of work and how to keep their morale up is to be able to fulfill those things. So that's really, I would say, those are just one easy way to be able to start doing that. But as a leader, you have to be ready to hear what they have to say.
Right.
And you might not like it.
That's right. You know, you might like Beth, what you are describing is what in my simple terms, I refer to as a culture of feedback. Right.
Yep.
So anybody can provide feedback to anyone at any level. I mean, said effectively, right? I mean, you can't just, you know, call somebody an a-hole and expect, you know, that to work. It doesn't. So that's where we go back to the, you know, the lowest common denominator of how to communicate effectively, right?
But so
that's what you're describing is that culture of feedback, right? And I talk about that ad nauseum as well. But what I'd love to know is if you look like when they have those. So there's two things that you said. When they have those 15 meetings a month that you just choose somebody and say, hey, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100, are they, you know, where are they at giving you that feedback? Are they at 100 or are they at 90 or 70?
Yeah, I mean, almost everyone has feedback to give, negative and positive. Like we absolutely... Because we have that internal culture where they know we will listen and we know that nothing will be held against them. Like in the end, we want the feedback because we want to be better. We want to do better and we don't want them to leave and look somewhere else for what it is that they're looking for. So that's number one. So we've created that culture. If you have a culture of fear, well, people are fearful to speak up, because of retaliation, or they think you're gonna, or you might lose your job, or they'll overlook you for the next promotion because you're not drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Like if you have that type of culture,
right,
then don't waste your time with getting feedback
because you don't have a culture of feedback, right? Exactly.
Correct. Exactly.
And it has to be driven by you as the CEO.
It absolutely has to. So one of the things that I try really hard at, and I continue to do is I work on a level of really, truly like open communication and full transparency. If they feel as though I'm being open and honest about the direction of our business or open and honest about my expectations of our company or what's happening internally in different departments, then I feel like they can trust me. And then they will open up to give information or feedback to their managers or to the HR team that then gets escalated to me for me to kind of decide to make decisions upon. So that's the critical part, right? I've got to make sure that we have that open line of communication and people feel really safe to giving the information that they want to give. And I think that we do a really good job of that. What we do have is we do like a star system. We're like 1 to 5 stars, 5 stars being we are absolutely amazing. And we have people rate us from 1 to 5. So our current rating as of today, just had my weekly business review with my team on Tuesday, is a 4.92. So I'm like, okay, like we are solid. We are doing a great job. If those numbers go down, which we historically we've seen, the numbers start to go down in October of every year. We don't know why.
That's so interesting.
October of every year, I think people are kind of hitting their limit. In the Philippines, it's like a different time of the year. It's the rainy season. It's just finally coming to the end of rainy season. So like us for the winter time, right? I mean, I know right now, I'm sure my stars, if I had to rate a company I work for, my stars might be going down too because I have not seen the sun in 4 months. So we know that it's cyclical and there's certain times of year where we can expect the numbers to dip a little bit. But then it's interesting, we do our year-end event in November. As soon as we do our year-end event, those numbers spike back up because people feel re-engaged. They've been given some really cool perks and some fun stuff and raffle items and everyone gets to see each other. We're remotely, but then we all get together in one place to see each other in person.
Very good.
We know we're doing a great job based on open line of communication. We're able to make sure we're getting that feedback and we're utilizing that feedback. And they know that I hear them. For example, something so small, but optical. We didn't have an optical benefit, right?
Oh, yeah.
We have 1,500 people that are staring at us at a computer screen every day, all day.
You're not good for
we
your
don't
eyes.
Have an optical benefit.
Yeah.
And so that was something that came up time and time again as something that came up in those HR meetings about do you have any suggestions what GMBA could do better? And they said an optical benefit. And that came up time and time again. I heard them. I listened. We added an optical benefit.
Wonderful.
So it's those types of things that they know that we're listening and we're hearing them. And you've got to make sure that obviously every company can't do everything, right? If their suggestions come out. But if you can make small strides in some of the things that they are asking for, they know you're hearing them, they know you're listening, and you're willing to make moves on things, they will be open in a communication.
You know, I think this is also a distinction, Beth, between public and private companies.
Yes.
Because you're a private company, you are not bowing, you don't have to bow down to Wall Street and beg.
Yep.
Which is what's drives everything, unfortunately.
Yep.
And you can, you have to like weigh, okay, so giving an optical benefit's going to cost us this much. Turnover is going to cost us this much.
Yep.
Where's the better ROI? I would assert the former, not the latter.
Correct. Well, and what we did is we knew that, okay, if we offered an optical benefit to the people that are here for the long haul, they've already hit 2 years of tenure. Yep. You get the optical benefit. So we're giving it to those tenured folks that we don't want them to go anywhere.
We
want them to feel like, okay, they're hitting another milestone and then they get an added benefit. And so that's what we've done. So it's even things like that. We're balancing that out where it's not given out to everyone on day one. They're going to earn it with time spent here and being part of our culture and knowing that they're a great culture fit. And then they're getting additional added perks as they stay long.
Well, that's a meritocracy, really.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Take us back to the beginning. What inspired you to start GMBA?
Yeah. You know, I was in a very busy position selling surgical devices in the operating room, which is what I love to do. I've been doing it for, did it for many years, and I love doing it. And my husband at the time is my ex-husband now, but he had a virtual assistant in the Philippines for his real estate business. Mm. And so that was my introduction into the Philippine culture, into the talent pool that's there. And so, and from there it was, you know, I knew how offices functioned, you know, previous to me being a surgical device sales rep, you know, I was, you know, in pharmaceutical sales. Yeah. I was in medical facilities all the time, every day, all day. I paid close attention as to what was happening in the office because I didn't want to be one of those reps that just showed up with donuts and pens, right? I wanted to show up. Okay, right. I'm going to
let's provide a little value.
Right. Exactly. I'm going to provide some value. Like, where can be valuable? And so one of the ways that some of the practices were really struggling, and one of the reasons that they weren't offering the particular medication I was selling was because the insurance verifications were taking too long. So I raised my hand and said, let me help your team and I will help do some insurance verifications with you. I won the business. I also learned how to do everything with insurance verifications. And so I'm like, so when I then started this company or really thought to start the company, I was like, that's where I'm going to start. I did insurance verifications. I know exactly how they're done for complex fertility. It was in the fertility space. For complex insurance verifications, I know how to do this. I'm going to start there. I also know how the rest of the practice works. What's the patient journey through a practice? Right. On the back end, what happens administratively about that patient X, right? And so with that, I was like, okay, I'm going to start in one piece of the practice, and we're going to expand from there. And then that was the birth of GMBA.
How often do you get to the Philippines, Beth?
I'm there about 3 times a year. Wish I could get there more. It's a long flight.
How long do you stay when you go over there? Hopefully at least a week.
I'm typically there for about 5 or 6 days, sometimes a little bit longer. But it's wonderful. And actually, as a business owner and a leader and someone, I'm so incredibly busy running the company. The flight over, I mean, it's 18 hours on the airplane.
Yes.
The flight over is my only time to fully ever be able to be disconnected. I become so much more creative. I then really start thinking about, okay, what is happening? What's going on behind the scenes? I also get a really good sleep in.
Yeah, right. Of course.
I get a really good rest in. But then that's typically when I've got a book with me. It's typically some sort of business book of some kind. I'm trying to think of, okay, what's happening in the business? Where can we go next? What can we do next? How can we make things a little bit better with whatever it might be? And that's really the time where I just being disconnected during those flights, I become so much more creative. But the problem is, as you know, like, you know, running a fast paced growing business, you get sucked into the weeds. You get sucked into the parts of the of the work that aren't creative. It's problem solving. It's putting out fires. It's handling HR scenarios. Like it just isn't so simple. Software situations where you're like, okay, we're renegotiating software terms, right? I mean, that sort of stuff. Like that's the stuff as a business owner you get sucked back into, and it's such a time suck. It doesn't allow you to be creative because you just don't have the time. So, and then of course we all have, you know, we all have responsibilities outside of our jobs, right? And so it's just a matter of finding that balancing act. And in most cases, the balancing act does not involve self-care, and it doesn't involve time for being, you know, for really trying to explore what the possibilities are and being more creative.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, what would you say your biggest bottleneck to growth is right now, if there is one?
Yeah, right now, I would have to say me. I am.
Very interesting.
In the past, our large growth has really been me in the weeds, plucking and poking at my network. And I'm the one still doing sales. I'm the one still doing the major growth piece. And so I'm building right now. I'm currently building my plan of who's going to be doing that, with additional team members I'm bringing on, and currently I've just brought on this past month, that can kind of get me out of the weeds of having to be the one that's the one pushing forward for growth of the business. Because you know, when I did, when we looked at the numbers for the last 2 years, 95% of the growth was from me. And that can't, that's not a healthy
company. You can't sustain that. No.
No. And it's
not if you're going to be the leader and the CEO and the visionary. That's not possible.
Correct. Exactly. So, so now I've got my, my plan in place. I've brought on a couple more people, and continuing to do so. Mm-hmm. And so bringing on the right marketing firm to work with our marketing manager to make sure that, okay, we can get leads. We can bring them in a different way without it having to be this, you know, the owner of the company. So I've been the bottleneck to growth, honestly. And so now I've
addressed
that.
That's not uncommon. I'm just going to mention that. No, seriously, it's not.
Yeah.
I run into this all the time. Go on.
Yeah. Yep. So I think what's exciting for me is, what's exciting for me is I'm really looking forward to see what the rest of the year will look like as soon as I have these people in place, because they will be a major assets to me and the company so that we can continue the growth that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, very interesting. So when we first talked, you said that those things were business development and customer success. Is that still the case? Those people you wanted to bring on when we talked about kind of what your priorities were for growth over the next 6 to 12 months?
I brought on someone. Yep, I brought on someone for customer success. So excited. Somebody who has you know, a lot of experience, worked with me for 7 years at a previous company. So I trust him. I know him. I know his approach. I think he will be an amazing asset to us and also our clients with making sure that we're hitting our service level agreements. And I think he's an amazing fit. And then the marketing firm, bringing in this new marketing firm to help us really catapult to bring bring our sales to the next level. Mm-hmm. And I'm still working on additional hires for business development.
Got
so
it.
that will be the next piece of the puzzle.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
So has your, if you kind of look at the last, over the last 7 years, has your offer evolved at what you're selling or how you're selling it since starting the company?
No. Honestly, no. Okay. Our mission and vision has stayed the same. Mm-hmm. We're still handling and doing the same types of tasks. They haven't really evolved much. The need has definitely shifted, depending on which disease state we're servicing. Mm-hmm. There's been especially in mental health, there's been a very, very heavy need for onboarding. So we're part of onboarding teams with onboarding new physicians, new practitioners, new mental health providers for getting them credentialed with insurance companies, getting them fully credentialed and getting them up and running. So it really depends on which disease state, but I have to say, for the most part, we're doing and servicing our clients the same way we have in 7 years. What is new, which I am excited about, is we are launching, though, an AI component of what we do. So we have Vera, where I'm very excited to bring Vera to light. She is our agentic AI agent who's going to help us do and perform all complex insurance verifications through AI. And so that's really exciting. So our virtual assistants will be overseeing up to 8 or 10 Veras calling to get and verify the insurance. And at any given point, if the call is not going well, they'll have access and they'll see their own dashboard.
Sure.
They will be overseeing and managing. They can interrupt the call and immediately interject and take over.
Good. That was my next question.
Yeah.
When the AI makes a mistake, and it's going to.
Oh, correct. Absolutely. So nothing is perfect yet. And also most AI still to this date still needs some human interaction. This is not entirely going to be driven on its own.
Yeah.
And we're in healthcare. We can't make mistakes.
No, you can't.
So we've got to make sure that's where I'm really excited about this, because I think we can service and provide even more because we will be able to do that much more in a given hour than we were able to do in the past.
Got it. So if you had to identify one thing, if solved, that would make the biggest impact on your business growth, what would it be?
Oh, gosh.
Is that one thing? Because you said a lot.
I would say for in my particular business with me, I think the one thing solved, again, stepping back as to what we just talked about, if I could get out of the weeds, if I can get out of having to be the salesperson, I think that, well, I'll always be selling because I love what I do. I love our business. So I always will have some component of selling. Mm-hmm. But having our the sales and the growth trajectory not based on my shoulders, but on someone else or other people on the mm-hmm. team, I think that sky's the limit. I think we're going to be able to do so much more than just because I'll really start thinking of other lines of businesses. You talked about what else are we doing? We haven't really evolved and done that much more except for our new Vera coming into play. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we're doing the same thing. And I think that we can really expand our services if I'm given the time to be more creative.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems to be, like I said, the common denominator with what you've been talking about.
Yeah.
So is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is important to talk about when it comes to evolving your workplace?
Yeah, I think we've hit a lot of the hot buttons. I think understanding your staff is critical.
Yeah.
Figuring out what they, you know, take the time, especially if you have some really key players you do not want to lose. And yeah. you may not lose them because they don't love what they do anymore. Or you may not lose them because they don't love the offerings that mm-hmm. you have or the company or the culture.
Something that better comes along and they just can't say no to it.
Right. So, but getting to know you, you just really taking the time to spend some time with them to see what do they love about their job? Mm-hmm. What are the things, if they could take something off their plate that they don't like to do, what would it be? Find out what those things are. Get those right. off their plate, you know, and evolve their role to make sure that they still stay heavily engaged and want to stay for the long haul, because you mm-hmm. don't want to lose those people. So I think that open communication, and sometimes And I get in the same rut. Sometimes they're like, do I want to poke that bear? I don't know if I have time to really mm-hmm. address if I poke that bear, what's going to happen.
Right.
But if you don't poke that bear, it's going to happen anyways. It's going to happen. So you might as well kind of engage at a level to find out, okay, how can I make sure that people want to stay long term mm-hmm. and how do we get that? Because we don't want to lose those really good people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Beth Raboyne, founder and CEO of Global Medical Virtual Assistants, I am so tickled to have you with me, and I just love talking with you. All right, awesome. Beth.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Harold.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review, and don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.